This is Interview, brought to you by MCA Records and Tapes. A sound communication from artist to audience. An inside look at the people whose music has changed our lives. Now, with another interview, here's Jim Ladd.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Jim Ladd. For the next 60 minutes, you and I will move across space and time for an interview of Yes. We'll make this journey through the view of a man who was one of the founders of the band 7 years ago, bassist Chris Squire.
We are sitting in, just to kind of set the space here, an actual wine. It wouldn't be a cellar because it's above ground, but it's where they store wine in this particular restaurant. It looks like there's, what would you say, 1,000 bottles of wine in this room we're sitting in?
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah.
Something like that.
Quite romantic. But, it's 4 a.m. in the afternoon.
Yes, yes.
With a microphone.
Right now, here we are.
Sitting
in Los Angeles. The first gig of this second half of this Yes American Tour 76.
If Yes didn't have the following that it does, it would be so easy to fall into that category of, well, the problem with Yes is they're too good to make it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's,
a lot of guys are like that. A lot
it
of
just goes to show that after all said and done, we weren't that good.
Is that the answer to it? Or do you think people are getting a bit more together?
No, I think that as a working band who plays shows, I think we're good at it. And I think that's why people come and see us.
When you stop and look at the philosophies that you all deal with, it seems really unique to me that there is that much of a following. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, I think I understand what you're saying, yeah.
Why
it's hard for me to answer, though, isn't it? Because I'm just at the hub of it, one of the creators, if you like. Our success in America especially has been a lot to do with our ability as a performing band. I think in a way we've sold records because of that as much because the records were good. And I think that people tend to hang on to an act that they can identify with on a performance level a lot more than an act which is more just records. We have had, enjoyed, and probably will do a longer life because we're not limited to the syndrome of, well, we're only as good or as popular as our next record.
How do you think the audience views you guys?
I think we all have our own fans within a Yes audience.
Yes, I'm sure
you know,
that's
true.
Aspiring bass players.
Exactly. Yes. And yet, those same people who may happen to be an aspiring bass player and I might happen to be their hero, at the same time they're also coming to hear the whole band and to see what the whole unit is doing. So in a way that's kind of what a percentage of a Yes audience is all about. I think a Yes audience are people who are definitely interested in music and they're definitely interested in hearing the way we do it, which is, let's face it, more different, and less people choose to do it our way for some reason or other, possibly because it is generally more of a select audience, although of course we have a very large audience. Back in the 1960s there's an explosion of energy and talent from the people who are creating music to the people who are playing it to the people who are taking chances and believing in what they were doing. I believe the same as it's the job of the musician and the writer to do his best in not educating but informing and being a kind of a entertainer in more ways than one. I think the same way people are also slightly responsible to be as innovative and as educative as possible, I suppose.
Communicators.
Communicators, yeah. I think that's it.
You could call Yes one of the most prolific progressive bands. In 7 years, 10 albums, and 1 film, one of the few bands to venture into performing on screen in their own full-length movie. I'm Jim Ladd, and Chris Squire talks about how Yes Songs film happened when interview continues.
The movie Yes Songs, we'll talk about something practical here for a minute. Who conceived that idea and said, let's put a song
Let's talk
film?
About something practical. I mean, that's not too esoteric. Yes Songs was one of those kind of films that was made very quickly and organized the day before a show we did in London at the Rainbow Theatre about getting on 4.5 years ago or something now. And anyone who's seen it will have noted that it's quite dark. You don't see very much. But on the other hand, it's a kind of a piece of history captured on film at the time when Rick Wakeman was playing with us. And as a piece of footage, it's fairly interesting.
But it is good history.
It's good
sure.
history. It's not a particularly good film, but that's not to say I'm knocking it, because I'm sure that people who have been to see it have been to see it for not expecting it to be a tremendously good film.
The thing that I expected to see that I didn't was with the incredible imagery and the aspects that Yes lyrics deal with and Yes music deals with, I expected to see more of that visually.
Yeah, well, it was not a very planned film, as I said. And then after it was shot and we saw some of the footage, we didn't think it was that impressive to actually work further on in any intense way. So that is why, in a way, it was just left as it was. What we're always hoping to do, and what we have in fact started doing, is shoot a proper, more organized Yes film, and we did quite a lot of filming at Philadelphia when we were on the East Coast this time around. Gradually we're going to build up a film around experiences that may happen over the next year, and it will have everything that Yes Songs failed on, possibly. But I mean, Yes Songs as a film didn't actually fail commercially. Very strangely enough, it did very good business.
What is it between you and John Anderson after all the personnel changes over the years? What's that bond that keeps you two guys together for so long?
I think just the fact that we started Yes, and in a way it was our baby at the beginning. Yes would never be the same, I don't think, if John left. I mean, I'd like to feel it would be the same if I left.
Yeah.
And really, that now applies to everyone. It takes a few years for people to identify a new musician.
Do you think it was hard for Patrick, excuse the term, in the wake of Rick, to come in and go,
yeah,
this new guy?
Sure it was. But he had the enthusiasm and the, want to do it. It's hard, yeah.
I think the only stimulant he took was drink, period. And he said that he would fire anybody in his particular band, and he was on his own at that time, that he cut smoking a joint.
Well, he played beer music.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, I think people go through phases in their life where they start believing heavily in a particular stimulus drug they take, whether it be marijuana, cocaine, heroin, or sex. Whatever people are into,
yeah.
They tend to sometimes get caught up in their own thing and get suspicious of something else. It's all the same energy, just being directed. So, Rick was very much into a beer thing. Everyone knows what's cool and what's not cool, and what you can do all the time and what you can try occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Is it kind of this common sense thing you were talking about before?
Yeah. I mean, you can never judge other people and what they do, but at the same time you can express your opinion to them.
Or relate your experience,
yeah.
Where you've been, and the fact that you maybe tried something and, went on to something else.
Yeah, that's why I think it's pretty good about rock concerts over here, when someone gets up on stage and starts saying, hey, someone's walking around with some THC, which is really a WX3 or something, don't try any of that. I mean, in a way, it's good. It's like the magazine High Times. I mean, as much as it's kind of
ridiculous that there can be a journal on drugs. At the same time, it can only be doing good in lots of ways because people are doing drugs, and so anything that's informing them in a nice way and not in a you will do this, you will not do that way is something that is going to help a drug problem more than any thousands of dollars spent on upholding laws.
What do you mean, I'll be the roundabout?
It's some, you know, like, it's another one of those things. I mean, there isn't anything exactly that we mean by it. The words and lyrics of songs come about in many different ways. Sometimes a line means something and sometimes a line flows with another line. You know, that words are just there to be used in different ways. If I listen to a song of somebody else's, I try and catch the meaning. Undoubtedly. Sometimes the meaning is very clear, and that's good. If you can write a song that's got a very simple, clear message, then in some ways you achieve the ultimate in communication, like McCartney does. Mm-hmm. I suppose our form of music is more, sometimes more artistic. You know? I don't mean more artistic than McCartney. What I mean is it's just that we tend to use the whole art of music and lyrics to blend a mix of something. That's what we have done on songs like Roundabout, where the lyrics are pleasant phrases that go nicely together and help the feeling of the song. Strong words kind of, you know, crop up here and there, but they don't necessarily relate to the next line always.
Yes is one of the few musically organic bands. Their music has developed by what might be described as a process of evolution. I'm Jim Ladd, and when we come back, a description from Chris Squire of how that music evolves from the group's songwriting process. And that's next on Interview.
What's the normal process with Yes? Is it usually the...
Well, there isn't a normal process, you see. It's very much a... It's always been a slightly hodgepodge situation like that.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Not with this band. I can't imagine that.
Only in the way that there's never been a set way of doing it. I mean, there are various set ways of doing it, possibly. It's not just all easy, but we have a few methods of formulating our music. Sometimes they are done directly from a song, you know, that has words, and sometimes it's done purely from a bass guitar riff, which is built on, and then we add some vocal afterwards and stuff like that. So we work from different points of view in different sections of the music. If one member of the band has a particular strong idea, either coming from his voice or from his instrument, then we gather around that idea and work away, feed off that idea,
I see.
Because everyone in the band is very strong. You know, that happens, you know, in a very varied way.
There is a name for that style of writing, which I cannot recall now, but it's... with some people write in a form of a story, or other people write in a form of reporting an event. You all rely much more on the imagery that are created line by line.
Yeah, that's right. But on Relayer, for instance, the lyrics were more direct.
Yes.
The last Yes album.
None of your albums are something that you can drop the needle on the first time through, understand totally, much less appreciate.
Yeah, when I was brought up, my father had records. In a way, that's what records were always about to me. Records that you could put on. My father used to be a big Billie Holiday and Ella Fitzgerald fan. He used to have all those kind of records. And, you know, like, and the way he used them, he had those records for years, and he used to play them every now and again, but all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the records never got boring, and they never got stale. And sometimes I think that there is a direction that a lot of artists go in for, which is very much the instant appeal, which of course is a great way of getting hit records and fast success, but it isn't a lasting thing, because they're only exploring a limited amount of what
music has to offer. The musical interpretation of the feeling of the song, the thing becomes a whole, usually, I mean, when we're working. You see, quite often, we won't be working from a song as such, we'll be working from the music.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a long way with that. And then, as on Relayer, John then went and wrote the words. Even though the tunes and fragments of ideas were there, the actual words were written to interpret the music.
Rather than the other way around.
Yeah, on Gates of Delirium.
What was it in Chris Squire's life that turned you from being a normal English human being into a person who would deal with the subjects that are dealt with, let's say, for example, in Tales of Topographic Oceans?
Well, music, I suppose. I suppose music has been the key to my life. And I think everything else stems from the music, from my point of view. The subject matter of Topographic Oceans was honestly more John's lyrical ideas.
Yes.
I personally was more involved in the music on that album.
But do you think it was the music?
Well, I think it was a development on Yes's part. You know, our career just developed that way. But, you know, after a period of time of a band being together and, you know, having talked on various subjects, late nights and things, and you know how it gets. You know, you can see a way to just to trying crazy things if you like. You know, I mean, there is, you know, our things like Close to the Ocean, Topographic Oceans were at the time as much kind of experiments, you know, with a slight kind of a crazy feeling behind them, as much as a kind of a, you know, a serious.
At one time or another, 9 different musicians have participated as members of Yes. The working band is now John Anderson, Steve Howe, Alan White, Patrick Moraz, and one guy who's always been there, Chris Squire.
All right, let me see some of these other biting questions that I have for you here, Chris, that are going to get right to the soul of Chris Squire.
The soul of Chris Squire, yes.
I'm Jim Ladd, and that's where we're going next, when Inner View continues.
The solo Chris Squire.
Yes.
Well, however mellowed out life becomes, there still has to be life and spirit and a bit of, you know, excitement attached to it. You know, I think that's, you know, that's why I'm saying, on one hand, you have to take it easy in order not to, you know, you can't over communicate, you can't mellow out too much. You know, like everything, you know, has to be kind of.
Balanced,
yeah.
Do you feel that after this life it's going to be, is that just a continuing thing? I mean, are we ever going to get it down so it's just cool? Is that ever going to happen, or is that not supposed to happen, or how do you look at that?
I see a world kind of unity in my lifetime.
The spirit with the knowledge, that's where I see the spark coming out. That it's turning it from the dream into the reality. Do you see that?
Yeah. I think that's very possible.
Do you think it's possible in our lifetime? And when I say a reality, let's use general terms like a world.
I don't know. I mean, see, the thing is, everything does speed up at the same time. I mean, what you see could possibly happen in 10 years' time, in 5 years' time, you might see that it's going to happen much quicker. You know, because things. It's a bit like a snowball, isn't it?
Going real fast every day.
Yeah.
It's almost like you can feel the wind of change blowing, you know, past your ears.
That's right, yeah.
It's an amazing thing.
Times, they are changing, as someone once said, an American, I think.
The soul of Chris Ware, what is your main vehicle, and I would say probably beside music, since music is probably your biggest vehicle for expansion and soul searching. Do you have any others that you're into?
My family is my other big thing in my life. You mm-hmm. know, I mean, it's amazing. You know, like they've come through the whole kind of movement with me in a way. You know, I'm happy the way the kids are growing up, the way they are, and everything.
And children of the revolution, are they?
So they're heavy. I mean, my 6-year-old can have a conversation that's on the level of most you know, 16-year-olds, and that's the development, the spiritual development. You know, this word spiritual, it sounds very religious, and in a way it is, but in another way it's very down to earth. It's very kind of like common sense being more around, and kids are getting more in tune with common sense of the older people. And of course our kids, they have a broader kind of vision around them from an early age.
What is the reason that you would go out and do a solo album when you have a vehicle like Yes?
If you're creative and you're always trying things out, at some point you're going to try and do your own album. I think, you know, after 10 Yes albums, I was ready to go and do it.
What do you hope for your personal being, your spiritual growth? Where do you see that going?
I have music, which is a fantastic vehicle for me to be able to say, hey, I really know what's happening, without having to say it, because I can devote that kind of energy into my instrument and the way I'm playing. I can do it that way. I mean, being a musician is a very fortunate position to be in, because it's a relief to all kinds of frustrations and feelings to be able to use an instrument just to let it out, which hopefully is what Yes is doing. Keep that revolutionary spirit, which is necessary for an individual to have. If you remember a dream, you can dream so much in, what is it, 5 seconds or something. A lot was dreamt in a short space of time, but for the adjustment to the real world, it's like waking up, you know, the day is still as long as it's long.
Yes has been called the first rock orchestra, because their mixture of musical flavors literally spans the centuries and the continents. From classical to jazz, folk to rock, blended personal musics that became a single odyssey across space and time. A journey, if you will, through a new musical landscape. Our thanks to Chris Squire.
Thanks to everyone who's been into Yes and stayed with us. And we'll try and be around for a lot longer, we hope, to give back to you what you've given us.
Well, then let me thank you as a spokesman for all of the people who have, and I mean this sincerely, really gotten something from Yes, you know, beyond tapping their foot, and that, I mean, have learned something from what you guys have put out. And I will just say thank you for all those people who can't physically be here, but I'm sure would really want to let you know that, you know, that they've gotten something from you guys.
Okay, thank you.
All right, man.
And most importantly, thank you for joining Chris Squire and me for this interview of Yes. I'm Jim Ladd.
WMMR in Philadelphia, better late than never, is 3/5 of Yes here. Hello. Hello. John Anderson over there with his little flute.
Better late than never.
It's better.
Too late.
Well, you're a little late.
Blame
that on Alex.
Yeah, well.
Steve Howell, over there.
I've got a microphone. I just sort of...
Well, over here.
Stereo.
How'd you get over there?
Okay.
Hello.
And Patrick.
Hi.
Patrick Morez, your first time up here. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. Very well.
Looking well. Patrick's wearing a lifeguard, Hermosa Beach, California. Were you out there?
Yeah. Well, last tour.
I gave you WMMR shirts, and you know.
I didn't have anybody to save them from the sharks or anything. You know.
I see. I gave you WMMR shirts.
Yeah, I was wearing one the other day when you came and saw me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I caught the first or the second evening of the tour down at Hampton Roads, Virginia.
Oh.
And how's it been going since then?
Really nice.
Better and better, getting better.
On the up and up and up.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, some surprises in store for us?
Yeah.
For tomorrow. John's just can't wait to play his wooden flute. What, you were telling me about this flute. I saw you last time. And,
no, I was just surprised. It's one of the surprises that was.
Oh.
Yeah. No, this is a bamboo flute. It's not wood.
Oh.
It's bamboo.
Bamboo is a kind of wood, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You want an argument?
A 10-minute argument or a
five-minute? This is getting hit on the head lessons in here.
Oh, right.
Why don't you play it?
I need a little reverb.
gave some echo.
Reverb, no.
Yeah, echoplex or something.
Like I'm in a kind of...
Actually, I might be... No, I don't... Well, if we could put that switch out there.
Well, let's take it in the box.
Where it says in and out, you see the little dial
there?
Here's
the reverb here.
Push it, turn it to out.
Ah,
right there, right. Put it on out.
Okay. If
the dial.
You've right. got 300 yards of echo now.
Let's try it.
Wait
a very interesting. We had the tape reverb there.
Modern things.
Really, that was an all-time first, I think, for us. Maybe we'll use that all the time. We'll use Echo all the time. John's is the latest album to be coming out here. And why don't I play a little bit of your own? I think I have Flight of the Morglade.
We played that last time we were here.
You played the rough cut. The rough cut. Yeah. This is the new final version.
The next cut.
What?
The next rough cut.
The next. Oh, it's. No, this is the. Not, I'm sorry, but this is the final thing, John. You have to release this now. As it is.
As is.
So I'll put that on here. Flight of the Morgue. You want to tell a little bit about the album?
Well, by the time this song comes, these four tribes have gone inside this ship, and it starts to. To tell the story of how the ship kind of comes alive because of the music inside the ship, and it takes off kind of thing.
You can continue.
The waste valuable time on radio.
Oh, our time is not valuable. We'll give you a bill afterward. It won't cost you that much, really, to be on. You know, depending on if you have something important to say, then it's worth it. John, the album is Olias of Sunhillow, and I've talked at length here with these other clowns in the band, and I haven't really talked at length with you about yours, but it is it's about the ship. Right.
Yeah, well, it's about a planet called Sunhillow and four tribes on this planet, and these three kind of magicians come out of the skies to save the four tribes from certain death, because the planet's on a kind of destruction course. So Elias builds a ship, the Morglade, and Kukwake goes out to talk to the people to get them together to go on the ship, and Manyork goes out to kind of plot the course. And the ship takes off from the planet. And basically, that's the story. It's a kind of Noah's Ark fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Where did this story come from?
Well, it just formulated over about 3 years, basically.
You created it.
Well, eventually I wrote it. I don't think you ever create things. They all kind of come in passing. You actually write them out. You actually state them. It's like I remember the earliest moment of the story came from looking at Roger Dean's work on Fragile and feeling the kind of motion from that, and reading a few books on certain things, and then feeling the need to write a musical story rather than write music for a story or a story for music. To write a musical story became a very strong need in me.
Well, you did, in fact, create it. even though you might...
Well, yeah.
No,
yeah.
You were the first human to discover it, in other words.
No, yeah, it was floating I wrote it down.
You were in the Reddit.
It was just floating around in the ether and came to you first rather than someone else, right? Is that what you did?
Fine.
Yes.
Okay.
A lot of time went into the production of the album. You did everything on the album, every instrument, every voice.
It was a kind of intense learning period, which was fantastic. It was... it kind of set me off on this kind of idea that I can always go away on my own and work on my own at a given moment. And
was it? Would you call it fun? Was it?
Oh yeah, it was extremely exciting at times, and extremely kind of the ups and downs were enormous. You can get very high and very low all in the space of an hour, and on the music and thinking you're getting somewhere. You think you're gonna. You're saying, oh, this is it, this is happening, and then all of a sudden it's not really happening, and so on. So you're questioning your validity as a musician continually. But it was originally a two-month kind of... going to take 2 months to make, but it took 6 months. And eventually, you know, I feel very much better for having gone through it.
Did the other guys hang around and give you... help and hindrance?
Well, there was kind of energy from them, even though we weren't together. They were working and finishing off their albums individually, and there were some rehearsals going on, and there was a couple of times we got together, but I was generally left to my own devices, so I could kind of just get on with it, basically.
It's real nice. It's real good.
Thank you.
Yeah. It'll be out in about 2 weeks, I think, the actual release of John's album, the fifth solo album. Then the boxed set of the five. Did you hear about that?
I hear.
Oh,
yes.
Oh really? Yeah. No, I just made it up.
Really?
Oh, there really is going to be one?
Oh, really?
For Christmas, maybe.
Oh,
the
that's,
five.
That's a good idea.
Good idea, right? Mm-hmm. There's a sampler LP out, just a little bit of each thing. Each, not an actual release, but radio stations. In fact, we're going to be giving out some, I think, through the stations for the fanatics who have to have everything. Speaking of everything, Steve Howe, every time you guys come here, we try to find something embarrassing from your past.
Very embarrassing.
And from Steve Howe's, we did the Warriors one time with John.
We talked, can we do the other side? Cause I think it's
again? You want to change it again? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I can listen to Stop Wait a Minute.
Tell them about when this was from your past, Steve.
Okay. Stop Wait a Minute. This is a single we made for EMI. We did it at... The other side. Ed's just turning over the other side. But I don't know. I don't remember much about this period. It was sort of just In Crowd. We were.
That was the name of the group, the In Crowd.
Yeah. I can't remember anything else about the group.
And this was the B side, You're On Your Own.
Which is a Diamond volume and tone pedaled.
And this was before you
Drink
were in.
My nose.
This was before you were in Tomorrow, right?
This was sort of the germ of the group, Tomorrow, the singer, Keith. And the rhythm guitarist on this, I don't think you can hear him on the record, but he ended up being bass player, because actually our bass player thought he got put in jail, but no, that doesn't, you know, that nothing to do with the image of the group, really, it was just a bit...
It was a single.
And here it is. This is You're On Your Own, which is the B-side, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here we are.
Oh. Yes. The In Crowd. And they don't make records like that anymore.
You know?
And just as well, I guess. Steve, what were you? 65. The young Steve Howe.
I'm ashamed of it.
And, but John, I thought you told me once that you had heard that this Steve Howe was a real good guy, real good guitar player.
I remember the first time I saw Steve Howe was down in this club in London called the Speakeasy, very famous club, and. I walked into this club and wandered through to the stage area and stood underneath this kind of guitar maniac. And there's about three people in the audience. And he was hitting every note available on the guitar. It was incredible to watch this kind of, these fingers moving at an incredible pace.
This was with Tomorrow?
This was with Bodas.
Yeah.
And he was hurtling away. I couldn't believe him. And I couldn't believe the whole night. It was one of those nights.
Right.
That was the first time I ever saw Steve.
And how much later did he join?
I'd say about 6 months later, I think.
Yeah.
Then we just met 6 months later, and then I remembered these fingers.
Patrick is here at the station for the first time. He didn't make a list. Oh, there you go, Patrick.
There you go.
And Patrick is the newest member of the group, as they say.
Shining.
Yes. you pick this guy wandering around in London, and you put this other group refugee. Right? Patrick, are you there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm there. Cool.
From your past, Patrick, we have dug up Maine Horse, which was way before refugee.
Right. Long time ago.
Yes. And what about this group? This is...
Well, it was a four-piece group with two English young musicians, a guitarist and a drummer, and a bass player who is now working with us, you know, is in the team, he's doing the sound, he's...
Jean Restore, and he takes care of your studio, doesn't he?
Yes, he recorded my album, he engineered my album,
right.
And...
nice job.
He played bass on the album and cello as well. And he composed actually one song, but if you want to play one track, which is quite short and crisp, and just to remember or to commemorate the day of today or tomorrow, we could play Such a Beautiful Day.
Okay, I'll play Such a Beautiful Day, just a moment here.
Very good, then.
We have Patrick and Steve and John from Yes Here.
I'm not here, I'm sorry.
Steve is not here, but our number.
Because the production was not very good.
Is that what you do to disguise that? You play. Our number is 561-5933 if you want to chant with any of these boys. Here. There you go. Such a beautiful day. Whoa, heavy metal music there from Patrick Moraz and Maine Horse.
Yeah.
Ooh, back around 1970s.
All right, we did this album about 6 years ago now.
Wow.
It was strange to hear it now, you know, really.
How long was the group together?
About 2 years, a year and a half.
Mm-hmm. And that was around the time that I think that you, that I think they came to see you, or you came to see them, was it, in Switzerland?
Well, Yes was playing a concert in Basel in Switzerland, and we were playing in one of the clubs, and they all came in one afternoon, you know, we were playing, you know, shitting ourselves on stage, and... and they were here, and then we went to see them in the night, you know. We eventually met, I think I met Chris and, what was it, who was... in Basel.
Oh, in Basel, yeah. I remember in the afternoon going down that steep hill on the left-hand side was that...
Right.
Club.
That club with three stores, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you must have got it on because it was a couple of years later, I guess, Patrick... joined the band. You said you always wanted to join this band, Patrick.
I always admired the band, yeah, very, very much. So I think it's always been very influential. First time I saw Yes was in April 69 at the Golden Rose Festival in Montreux, and I was with Jean actually there, and it was really the only band which really came through as a true professional band. I mean, a true, really a gem, you know. We thought that's a band who's going to really make it very big.
Mm-hmm. So now what do you think? Now that you joined them, you're still okay, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The tours are underway for a couple of weeks. I saw you down at Hampton Roads. And Jonathan Takeoff here has popped in. Oh. And he, I know, has a question just bursting to ask you.
Yeah, I wanted you fellows to deal with the question of the difference between playing an indoor facility and an outdoor facility.
Mainly because
tomorrow
is the outdoor.
Right, you're playing for 105,000 people outside, and how is that different from?
We just couldn't fit them inside.
It's open air is fantastic, really. It's something about it. It's a kind of a very festive occasion, and indoors is a very kind of organized kind of gig. You get used to that kind of thing, but outdoors, you breathe and you're out in the open air. It's just something more. Possibly more exciting about an outdoor gig, and obviously with that kind of amount of people, the energy that's around is fantastic.
Would you change the programming of of your show for an outdoor crowd as opposed to an indoor? No?
Not really. We've been trying over the last couple of weeks to formulate, well, we have formulated the show for all occasions, really. And we've been really happily doing the gigs and working towards gigs like tomorrow and the rest of the tour.
The sound system is gigantic for tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, it's two WEM, is it? Two Fender Rhodes.
Two WEM cabinets. And a nice society in the backstage.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I have to shout a bit louder.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, it's got a good echo here.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, actually.
Well,
I'm going to guess.
We'll get you a little megaphone, maybe, or something, to sing over. It is. It has to be an exciting...
It's a big kind of system. It's...
Eight systems.
Roy Clare is the man, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He gets it together.
I don't want to give the whole thing away, but there's some lighting effects and all sorts of things in this show.
Gosh,
I'm definitely standing on my head.
Definitely. Yes. The trampoline, I felt, was not really necessary, but, you know...
you showed me. You started jumping them down like pogo sticks.
Right, and John has changed his style a little bit. He does, you know, a little bit of theatrical acrobatics there, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to perfect triple somersault.
Right,
flat on
right.
Ed, did you ever talk about seeing the rehearsal at, where was that, Mercer County College?
No, I didn't talk too much about that. Yes,
that you would put on, that you would take over a facility at a college where all the students had gone home, or most of them, right? Wasn't it?
A couple of weeks ago.
Went into the gym or something?
They rehearsed, yeah.
Did the whole show?
Oh, yeah.
To warm up?
Oh, we just like playing, so you like to see what we're trying to do. And just.
It was good, but it's changed a bit since then, hasn't it?
Yeah,
the show?
We seem to have wandered into a kind of very strong...
Do you want to tell us at all about what kind of things?
No, it's all a surprise.
It's all a surprise. Okay. Now the show tomorrow is sold out. As a matter of fact, which is incredible. There's a show on Sunday in Washington. You're doing the same show with Frampton and Gary on Sunday, mm-hmm. And there are still tickets available for that. They want me to tell you there. So if anyone wants to come down to Washington, you know, I think I'll come down.
I'm going.
You going?
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's a good...
Kennedy Stadium?
At Robert F. Kennedy.
Robert F. Kennedy
right.
Stadium.
Also, now I have a couple of questions. People phoned in, and they've just been dying to ask you. What are the words sung at the end of To Be Over?
Ah.
The mysterious missing words.
Yeah.
Will somebody please phone in and tell
right.
us?
No, I'm asking you.
Well, basically, it was just a kind of little chant that we got into towards the end of that piece. And, I didn't really want to get into any more lyrics, having said quite a few things on the lyrical context of the album, you know.
Uh-huh.
So I just thought it'd be a kind of nice idea to la 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 la, which is kind of a bit not really happening. So it became do sa to le sa to ra sa to le tu sa ra do sa to le ta to ra said
ta
te, which is basically just sound, you know, actual. Sound. It doesn't mean
it's not words, is what you're saying.
No, it's just sound.
Who made up these sounds? Did you make these up? You're the one.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I really.
Well, that's the answer.
Didn't mean to confuse anybody.
That's the answer to that question. Someone else said, "Are you doing a soundtrack for a Olympic movie?" Someone doing
soundtrack.
No, nobody's doing that.
No, I don't know anything.
Is that one of yours, possibly, Patrick? You're doing
it. I've done a lot of movies, but not this.
he's on the last bag with Paris.
Oh, you're
well, that is a really, really strong gamers.
Your movie Yes Songs is finally going to play Philadelphia, I think, next weekend for a couple of appearances.
Good.
Finally, it's been a long time. And you had recorded the last Spectrumite concert, I think, for some use. But did you ever do anything with those tapes? Do you remember that?
We still got them. We were listening to them before we came over here. And some interesting kind of...
Would we hear a live album coming out sometime again? Or?
Well, we're thinking that possibly towards the end of next year sometime. I don't know for sure. I think it would be nice to be able to put out another live album in due course.
Okay. And about the quote next Yes album. What do you stand on that right now?
Well, we've done some very strong preparatory work, and it's all coming along very nicely. And I think we're all looking forward to it so much. It will be a culmination of a lot of things, you know.
When might we expect to have that album, do you think? Any guesses? What?
New Year.
In the new year.
Christmas is very, very chancy, but I mean, you know, New Year.
Okay. All right. I'm going to play one more track here from John's album, the other advanced little track here, A Meeting, and Sound Out the Galleon from Olias of Sunhillo. And thank you, Steve, and John, and Patrick.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
We'll see you tomorrow, the big show at JFK. And I can't wait. How about you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fun.
Thank you.
Wait, you have your... Let's see what you're going to do here. I'll intimidate you here into picking up this Guild 12-string here. When you write your tunes, what instrumentation do you use?
When I write personally, sometimes it's on the piano, which I don't really play, and other times it's on, you know, the six-string guitar, which I don't really play either. You know, I.
How can you play it but not really play it?
When you're associated with people of Mr. Howe and Mr. Mraz's caliber, you realize that you don't really play those instruments. But they've certainly been very useful to me. I mean, I love what I personally do as a bass player. You know, I mean, I love to be a bass player, and that is my particular,
Did you always play the bass?
Yeah, pretty well. I mean, I started playing bass, and then I had a period where I thought I might want to play guitar, but that only lasted a couple of months, and then I went back to playing bass.
In the scene, you play bass?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Do you ever play the big upright basses?
I have one at home.
That's really a different instrument, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I've been into music stores all my life and played around with them and thought, shall I buy one of these? And I never found one that I thought, yeah, I'd really like to own that instrument. And recently over in London, when Stanley Clarke was over there, we met, and he showed me his string bass, which is something that I've never been able to find in a shop. It's a really beautiful instrument, very easy to play, as easy as the bass guitar, I thought. And so if I had an instrument like that, I think I might start to develop some talent in that direction. But as of now, I'm still just a...
Then we might see you in there thumping away.
Yeah.
No, sometime. Do you want to try something with that? Your coffee here or what?
Well, I mean, it's interesting you should ask what I wrote certain things on. I mean, I did the last tune you played on the album, Lucky Seven.
Yeah.
Was in fact came from a basic kind of riff that was written on the 12-string guitar, but I believe it's tuned differently at the moment. Can you demonstrate that? Yeah, it's all tuned differently at the moment, but the basic riff of Lucky Seven was something that I played around with on the guitar, and it was just over two chords, really, you know, which is an E minor, which I can't play at the moment, for reasons that... what can I do? I can play some kind of... that's the kind of, you know, one thing I'm into, of tuning a 12 string to kind of an open chorded G and just strumming around on it for maybe an hour, half an hour, sometimes, usually late at night when I'm feeling a bit that way.
And sometimes a song comes out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just one kind of method.
Do you think you're a prolific writer? I mean, have you written a lot of things?
I think I have to work at it. I don't think I'm one of these people who I don't know. It's hard to judge yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I can, you know.
Have you written a lot of songs that we'll never hear? Do you think? Or
I hope not. Oh. I mean, I hope that you'll hear them eventually. Oh. Although I have written a lot of songs that haven't been heard yet, and not all of them I like, really. I mean, some of them I think, yeah, it's a fun song, but if I seriously came down to thinking about an album, I might, you know, pass on some things, you know, for something else that's more appealing, I suppose.
Writing by yourself is different from writing with John, for example, is it?
Yeah. Well, obviously, it's a different thing.
Do you remember writing Sweetness? Remember?
Yeah.
How did that come about? You had just met, I think John told me that you had just met, and the next day you got together and wrote a song?
Yeah. That was it. It was just one of those things where we met in this bar in London, and the next day he came around to my garret kind of flat, and
what if he hadn't come around?
Well, I wouldn't be here, would I?
Yeah.
And Clive Bailey, who was the guitarist then in the band that was forming, didn't have a name. He was kind of there as well, and between the three of us, we kind of, you know, just wrote this simple, silly little love song.
Silly, yes. A silly little love song.
I always
liked that little song.
Yeah. It's nice.
Well, at that time, I guess there were other songs that you wrote with John that we never got to hear, do you think? Or there were some that never got to hear?
There are some songs that Yes performed in their early days. On the road.
Yeah.
And that were never actually committed to tape. But a lot of those were arrangements of other people's material. And we started off doing various things. We did some Vanilla Fudge songs and even our own arrangements of music by the Fifth Dimension and stuff like that. I mean, it was weird, you know, what, some of the stuff we started to do, but in a way it was a good kind of grounding for what we developed into, because we were into that kind of I don't know if you remember the Magic Garden album of the Fifth Dimension.
Yeah, yeah, I do.
I think the songs were written by Jim Webb on
that. Right, right.
And that was a beautiful album at the time it came out.
Hmm.
And I used to love that kind of music about that time. And also that other American band called The Association.
Remember Windy?
Yeah, and all those beautiful songs.
Along Comes Mary.
Yeah, Along Comes Mary. It's definitely that. Right.
You want to do the song?
I don't know it.
that was the one that had the da 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 da, just were ram, you know, real quick lyrics, like,
yeah.
Real packed lyrics.
Yeah, beautiful song.
You know.
And
brings me Pick of Memories. Remember that one?
So, there are other songs. There's one song that I've been trying to locate for a number of years that we recorded once for BBC, which is the British radio station, British Broadcasting Company. And we did a song for a show that was the only time we ever recorded it. We'd learnt it and we played it on stage, and then we were asked to do this show.
What was the song?
And we did it, and then we dropped it after that.
What was the song?
Well, it was a song that we wrote together called Once on a New Day or something. I can't remember. It sounded a bit like something from what was that old musical? Hawaii. What was that one that said in Hawaii? It was on the TV recently. You know?
Hawaii? No. Uh-huh.
I don't know. Anyway, it was...
Blue Hawaii? No. Uh-huh. So...
South Pacific.
Oh, South Pacific.
It was like
South
a song from that, but
yeah,
our own kind of rock kind of look at it, and you know, it had a bass solo in the middle, and we just did it spontaneously for this show, and I've never heard it again since. But I promise you, Ed, if I find it, I'll send you a copy.
Well, you can't even find your copy of Something's Coming, you know, which was the B-side of Sweetness. We have this terrible scratchy tape of it that's just awful, and I can't possibly find a copy of it.
Well,
you know? You should.
Atlantic Records.
Well, they point to you. You point to them, and we never hear. But anyway, it occurs to me, you know, that you and John are the two original members. You're the only two original members of this band, the founding fathers here.
Yes, that's right. I mean, we've been through a few changes through the last 5 years, and those things happen. Let's say that I'm not specifically glad that they all happened, because, you know, some of the guys like Peter, Tony, especially Bill and Rick Wakeman as well, you know, were great people to work with. But human nature is what it is, and it changed. But fortunately, you know, one of the things that happened for us is that we were always able to replace the leaving member with someone else, mm-hmm. who not only could manage to take on the job of the last person, but also add a new dimension as well. Mm-hmm. But we're pretty, you know, relaxed now into the idea that we would like this particular band, and we all feel that way, to stay, you know, pretty well together now, so we can really get down to making some albums, you know, without the worry of who's just left and who's just coming in, you know.